Are you a questioner, a wanderer, or even a bit of a snooper? If so, then you'll feel right at home in Knoxville. We've got miles of trails to wander in our urban wilderness, award-winning eateries to satisfy your culinary cravings, cultural sites to open your mind, and dog-friendly activities that'll have everyone wagging. Knoxville, calling the curious. Learn more at visitknoxville.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hour number three, Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. Chase McKay, Big Joe Dubin with you at Social Cantina here at next to First Horizon Park, home of the Nashville Sounds. Dr. Crane, Nick Frazier, back of the studio, and we say hello now to John McClain down in Houston. John, hope you had a good Memorial Day weekend. How you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. I did. Astros have won four in a row coming off a no-hitter of the hated Rangers. Got three more games, and so people are getting excited about baseball again.
Yeah, it is certainly that time. I, you know, we're in list season when it comes to sports talk radio and all those things, and I was reading through a couple of ones, including NFL players that have are coming into a make-or-break season in 2026, and one of those players is the Texans quarterback, C.J. Stroud. Now, I don't know if I completely think that it's make-or-break, but what kind of pressure do you think is on Stroud going into this season?
Well, first of all, it's not make or break. Anybody would say that's clueless. But he is under immense pressure. It's funny because they won 12 games last year. They won a playoff game. They won the division the 2 years before that. They won playoff games. And people are acting like he could be gone after next season. That's not going to happen. Barring some kind of catastrophe, which I don't know anybody that anticipates that, he'll sign one of those monstrous extensions after next season and be cemented here for a long time. The team loves Stroud. They love his personality, and he's been productive. Now, in the playoffs last year, he was terrible, and I still blame a lot of that on their offensive game plan in New England. But people here, he doesn't, you know, the fact is, with their defense, he doesn't have to be great. He just has to be good and not turn the ball over, which had not been an issue for him until he got in the playoffs.
Well, and that would actually was my next question for you, that I look at the defense and how much they've built that up over the course of the last few years, that shouldn't that be the perfect scenario, that they have a stifling defense that it will take some pressure off of the offense?
Well, I'll use the playoffs as an example. They beat Pittsburgh, had two defensive touchdowns. They won in Pittsburgh, so they go to New England, and common sense tells you they got a good chance to beat New England, but the last thing you do is turn it over. So if you got to play a conservative game plan, throw a lot of short passes, if you got to give it up, just don't do it with turnovers. So what happens? They come out throwing the ball, and one reason their running game was bad, and mainly because the offensive line, they never had their top running back, Joe Mixon, last season, but their first-year coordinator, Nick Caley, had him throwing the ball, and from his first interception, it went downhill for that. But he had not had a game like that the previous year when they beat the Chargers, and then they went to Kansas City. They lost by 8, and Stroud played real well. So it's not like it's been a potential problem in the playoffs, but no matter how he plays in regular season, people are going to say, okay, just wait for the playoffs. One thing about this defense, they are loaded at every level, and they got talent. And the three, they could be, they are the third best defense right now in our city's history. The Love You Blue Oilers, who came back-to-back AFC championship games, lost in Pittsburgh both times to the eventual Super Bowl champion Steelers. They had three Hall of Famers on that defense, and Robert Brazil, Elvin Bethea, and Curly Cup. And the 93 Oilers with Buddy Ryan, in his only season as defensive coordinator, they had the best defense in the NFL. They knocked 11 starting quarterbacks out of games. And they were unbelievable all season. Nasty. That was a nasty group. They fought with themselves in practice. They fought in training camp. Buddy Ryan did everything to stoke the fires, including throwing a punch at offensive coordinator Kevin Gilbride on the sideline of the game. And so this defense has got a chance to be as good or even better. But first of all, they got to get them further in the playoffs.
John, did you ever ask Bud about that incident? Because that was on Monday Night Football when that fight happened. Did he ever have any comments about that? Do you remember?
Oh, gosh. Let's see. They won that game, so Bud would have been in the locker room. He came down after his victories, and usually he had a drink in his hand. So, man, he was going to say something really interesting. And because that happened right before halftime, and legend says that Buddy Ryan hit Kevin Gilbride. Kevin would have kicked his butt because wide receiver Curtis Duncan stepped between him. And Buddy got mad because Kevin was throwing the ball at the end of the first half, still running the clock when the Oilers were being hit, and turned the ball over instead of just going on into the halftime dressing room. And I'll never forget, in the old Astrodome, they had TVs about every 10 seats. And one guy says, he was right under the TV on the front row of the press box, said, "Did y'all see that?" Said, "What?" Said, "Well, Chris Berman just said, Buddy Ryan threw a punch at Kevin Gilbride, and they would show it when they came back from a commercial." So everybody in the press box got in front of whatever TVs they showed it. And I remember we had 8 writers there because that team was really good and they were winning. And I called them all together and I said, "Guys, this is going to be one of the biggest stories in history, especially of the year, because Buddy created all these controversies with Kevin Gilbride. I'll write about the game. The rest of you write about that." And I said, "So-and-so, you chase Kevin Gilbride. So-and-so, you chase Bud when he's down there." They didn't tell him a person called Gilbride Buddy. Well, Bud Adams had told him he didn't want anybody commenting on it after the game until they got all their, bleeped together. And Buddy commented on it anyway because he defied everybody. Gilbride was so discombobulated when the media followed him into the parking lot, he couldn't find his truck, and his fans had to show him where he parked. There was no private parking. And so I can't remember what any of them said. And they won the game, knocked out another quarterback, Lamar Jackson, won the division, posted the divisional round game when they had a bye. Then they got beat by Joe Montana and the Chiefs. To me, that was an incredibly disappointing loss because they should have won the game to return to the championship game.
Oh, absolutely. We used to work with Brad Hopkins, John, and we would kid Brad because on that play that made Buddy go crazy, Brad missed a blitz. Him and Munchak were on that side, and they missed the call on the blitz, and so that was the quarterback they got crunched, and then that's when Buddy went crazy, and Brad was like, "Man, I was just a rookie, and I was lucky I was on the field." And it's just funny how that play, John, 32 years ago, yet it's one of the most memorable moments of Monday Night Football ever.
That's one of those where people say Buddy Ryan, Kevin Gilbride. They don't think immediately of Buddy coaching maybe the greatest defense in history
right,
of the 85 Bears, which is still the most dominant one-season team I've ever seen. They think of Buddy and throwing that punch on the sideline.
Yeah, it's crazy. John, I was having a conversation with a friend of mine. We were talking about, you know, it's the Mount Rushmore, this and that. And we got on the Texans. And I wanted to ask you, I've been looking forward to ask you this. Where does Arian Foster rank as far as Texans legends go? Because undrafted out of Tennessee, we're like, oh, man. And then, like, second year, he, like, hit it for the Texans and was unstoppable. Where does Arian Foster, in your eyes, John, rank with the Texans?
Foster is the greatest running back in Texans history. Led the league in rushing. He was a great receiver, blocker, everything. He was just a weirdo. And when he came in as an undrafted freshman, as a rookie, only reason I would talk to him because he went to Tennessee and I was doing a talk show in Knoxville like I was in Nashville. And I went up to him and I asked him about a couple of guys I was on the air with, and I won't mention one of them. He did not like that guy because I know Arian had been the subject of some controversy there. Anybody that says they talk dinosaur, you know there's something strange about it.
Right.
So as a rookie, they didn't know what they had. He was on the practice squad. Anybody in the league could have got him when they put him on waivers. And then put him on the practice squad. He ran down the field chasing kicks. And then they fought when they activated him. And in the last game of the year, he ran for 90 yards. And people are like, that guy might be decent. But they still used a second-round pick on Ben Tate from Auburn the next year. And that next year, they opened the year against the Colts and Peyton Manning. And Arian rushed for over 200 yards. And they beat Peyton and the Colts for the first time. And Arian was a star after that. And I remember when he got his big contract extension, I asked him a question in the big news conference, and he went into Gary Kubiak, the coach's office, and he told Kubiak, John McClain made me cry. And Kubiak's, what? What do you mean? Well, what happened? He cried because I asked him what he was going to do for his mama because I knew they were real close, and he got all emotional about it. That's the first time anybody ever said I made him cry, other than my little brother.
We'll have more with John McClain coming up next. Chase and Big Joe on this Tuesday, 102.5 The Game. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game on this Tuesday. Continuing with John McClain, Danny Houston. John, you know, whenever I hear names like, you know, Mike Munchak and Bruce Matthews and Brad Hopkins, I obviously think about those great offensive lines that the Oilers and the Titans in the early days had. And, you know, with so many years of this current Titans team trying to figure out the offensive line, it always makes me want to ask you, I mean, what made those groups so good that they were able to year in and year out reload the offensive line? Obviously, you had the pillars, but guys like Matthews and Munchak and Hopkins, but what was it that they were able to continuously build good offensive lines?
Their general manager, Lad Herzig, who got the job when Bum Phillips was fired, Lad had been their controller. He was the youngest GM in the league. He's 34, didn't know squat about football, but he was smart enough to know that he had to get a good personnel guy, and he hired Mike Olivak, who's the best personnel guy I've ever seen, along with C.O. Bucato. So they had Mike Olivak and C.O. Bucato in their scouting department. And Herzig's philosophy was, because when he took over in 81, Earl Campbell had led the league in rushing 78, 79, and 80. And their offensive line was not good. So Ladd told them, he said, I want to build an offensive line for Earl. And the first pick in 82 was Munchak. First pick in 83 was Matthews. The second pick in 83, 28th overall, because that's the franchise, was Harvey Salem, an offensive tackle from Cal. So in 2 years, they used two ones and a two. The first pick in 84, Nebraska guard Dean Steinkuhler. So they used first and then the first pick in the second round over a three-year period to bring in four starting offensive linemen for Earl Campbell. Now, Earl ended up rushing for over 1,300 yards in 83. 82 was a strike season. 81, he was good, and then he got hurt, and they traded him to Bum Phillips in New Orleans in 84. And then they were terrible. And so they had a lot of issues with contracts. But Munchak and Matthews, you know, Mike is as good an offensive line coach as I've ever seen. I was hoping like crazy the Texans would hire him. When Bill O'Brien took over in 14, he tried to hire Mike. And Mike and Marcy decided they wanted to go back to Pennsylvania because their parents were getting older, so he went to work for the Steelers. Last year, I was hoping that Nick Cayley, who came from the Rams, where Mike works, he lives in Denver, but he works for the Rams as kind of a consultant advisor. And I was thinking, okay, Nick Cayley should hire him, but he kept a guy who he'd worked with the Patriots for years, but still praised the heck out of me about Munchak. And I wanted to say, well, why the hell didn't you hire him? You've got to have a good offensive line coach. Some of them can make chicken salad out of you know what, but boy, it doesn't beat having talent and a great line coach, which is what the Texans had. The Oilers, one year their line coach, Bob Young, who played 17 years, including with the Oilers, and was a good friend of mine when he had a heart attack, died in his 50s. We used to play golf on Fridays, and one time I said, don't you ever feel guilty leaving Fridays and not staying with everybody else? He goes, oh, hell, Munchak Matthews can coach them better than I can.
You know, one thing that's interesting, you mentioned Munchak being such a great offensive line coach, and he was a Hall of Fame player. Why do you think it worked for him, but it didn't work for Bruce? Because, we loved it when Bruce was here, but he struggled as the offensive line coach when Munch was the head coach.
I have no idea. And I'll say this, when Bruce wanted to get into coaching, he asked me if I could ask Kubiak if he'd be interested and hiring him, you know, for the bottom level. So Bruce, at 6'5 and probably 3'10 then, was in basically a closet with two other quality control guys, and he would put out practice dummies and before practice, and I'd give him all kinds of grief. And I'd say, do your players know who you are? He said, well, of course they know who I am. I said, do they know you went to 14 Pro Bowls in a row to a first ballot Hall of Famer? He said, well, what, am I supposed to tell them that? So I went up to one of the players. I said, do you know who's passing out the dummies and limping around all the time because of a calf muscle he hurt after his career? And they're like, yeah, Coach Matthews. I said, Google it. And so then when Mike took over up there, he hired Bruce. Mike was a great technician. Bruce was athletic. The line coach, Bob Young, used to say, Bruce drives me crazy. Munch does everything he's supposed to do from a technical standpoint. He listens. He puts it all into use. Where Bruce doesn't listen, he doesn't do what he's supposed to, but he still does it better than anybody else because he's so damn talented. He's like a ballerina. Sometimes I wish I could put a tutu on it. And I went to Bruce and I said, you ever worn a tutu? And I did a story out of that. But Bruce was such a great natural athlete. He could get from point A to B without using the technique that the coaches were telling him. Now, Bruce might not admit that, but that's what his line coach told me.
Well, I mean, think about it, John. He probably could have made the Hall of Fame at a center, guard, or tackle, right?
Joe, he played the equivalent of a full season at every position in the offensive line, and there's never been a more versatile offensive lineman than Bruce Matthews. And I tell people when I introduce him or I'm talking about him, he's the greatest offensive lineman in history, not the greatest guard, tackle, or center. And he never missed a game in 19 years, just like his brother, Clay Matthews. And Bruce started getting hurt like crazy after his career ended in freak accidents, blowing out his knee, cutting limbs in his yard, blowing out a quad, throwing passes to the kids in the neighborhood, and he slipped in a puddle, things like that. And then he got hurt a couple of years ago, stepping off of Jake Matthews, his son's boat, at a lake. and he did it again. But he was as good a lineman as I've ever seen. And Mike Munchak was really tough. You know, he's from Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Jerry Glanville told me one time, and he told me off the record, so I never used it, that they were best friends, Munchak and Matthews. And he didn't want the Southern California beach boy to turn the tough guy from Eastern Pennsylvania into a Southern California beach boy. And I said, well, I don't think you got to worry about that.
John, we talked earlier about Arian Foster, but one free agent that's out there, former Texan, is Jadeveon Clowney. How much was the hype around him, John? Because he was the number one guy. He made that great play in the Citrus Bowl. When he came there, was his time in Houston, John, a disappointment, or was it just average?
Well, his first season, he blew out his had that microfracture surgery on his knee, and then had to have subsequent multi surgeries on that same knee. And the fact is, he's still playing. And the reason he's not here is Bill O'Brien was a stickler about details and guys doing exactly what he wanted when he wanted it. And Clowney and DeAndre Hopkins, while they played hard, they kind of marched to their own drummer. So he traded them in two of the worst deals in pro sports history, and both of them are still playing. Clowney had, I think, 9.5 sacks last year, the Cowboys. I don't know why they didn't bring him back. And he's a mercenary. He works out here. He misses training camp. Then he signs right at the end of training camp, and he's still great against the run. You know, when he hit that kid and his helmet came off, yeah, that was on a running play, not a pass play. And Clowney's never had 10 sacks. And he asked me one time, he said, why does everybody expect me to get 15 to 20 sacks? I've always been better against the run. And if I needed a pass rush and a guy that's going to play in passing situations, and I say that because he can be so disruptive, he can disrupt the running game, but at this point in his career, people want him putting pressure on the passer. So it turned out he came back when people said his career would be over because of the kind of surgery he had.
John, if you had to ask one player that's the greatest Texas player, is it J.J. Watt?
Well, it'd be J.J. Watt or Andre Johnson. You know, if you ask people, is one offense and one defense, they're not one and 1A. If you ask J.J., say Andre. You ask Andre, say J.J. Since Andre's in the Hall of Fame, I'm going to say him. But next year, Watt ought to be in the Hall of Fame first ballot, just like Andre Johnson wasn't the first ballot. He was third. But I think Watt will go in with that Brady fellow on the first ballot.
I would agree with you on that. John, appreciate the time as always. We'll talk next week.
Sounds good, guys. Thank you very much as always.
See ya. That is John McClain joining us here on the program, as he usually does on Mondays at 2. We'll come back with more from Social Cantina here outside First Horizon Park on 102.5 The Game.
What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear. Strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/Ohio's time.
Are you a questioner, a wanderer, or even a bit of a snooper? If so, then you'll feel right at home in Knoxville. We've got miles of trails to wander in our urban wilderness, award-winning eateries to satisfy your culinary cravings, cultural sites to open your mind, and dog-friendly activities that'll have everyone wagging. Knoxville, calling the curious. Learn more at visitknoxville.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.